Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Eleanor, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in Socratic email classes. Welcome, Eleanor.
Hi, Jen. Happy to be here.
Hey. Good, hey. Thanks. So, you know, I realize it's possible that there might be some folks listening who don't know about email classes at all. So I thought we might cover the bases there just in terms of the basic format of an email class, and then we could look a little bit more closely at the Socratic ones in particular. So
okay.
Maybe you could just lay out for us your experience of kind of what an email class opportunity is, how that goes.
Sure. I love email classes. It's like a month-long conversation with the guide, I think. So, in this one, I guess the Socratic one is special because we start out choosing a focus, right? Each person.
Exactly.
And that's kind of not general, but that's kind of how it works. So, where to start? Via email and a certain number of words, we send our what we're looking at in, and then the guide sends a response and does a response for each person and posts that online. And so all the submissions and responses are posted without any names, with all the names removed, but we get to see them all, which is really exciting. And then we practice with that response for a few days, I think maybe 4 days, and then we send back in another email of what we're seeing, and then we get another response back and practice with that and so forth. For I believe we get maybe 6 exchanges this time.
That is a great,
like that.
I think that is true. Yeah, I can't remember exactly, to tell you the truth. Here's what was so for me. It came through the sign up, and I signed up and sent it off, right? There's just no, if you've done it before, you don't really need to get all the detail of how, in the sense that it's like, no, I know that I want to do this. And then,
it is much, it's not, the dates are all, it's all pretty clear once you get going on it. The instructions are clearly outlined and,
Exactly. And I just want to underline what you said. I thought that was a perfect description in terms of it's a month-long conversation with the guide and that it's a very big conversation. It's both a small conversation in that you and the guide, you know, whatever you're looking at in particular, but it's also a really big conversation in that sense that you talked about, that we get to read every single person's what they wrote in and the response that the guide offered to that, but with the anonymity maintained, so no names on it. So no one has any idea, you know, what I wrote in particular, and yet we each get to benefit from everyone else's responses. So, yeah, that was a great description.
Exactly. So I find when it's posted, so you get a notification that some responses have been posted. And, you know, you're looking through, and I have this kind of urgency coming in to find my answer, but then I get the other answers sometimes will answer exactly what I'm looking for and just totally or whatever I need in my practice at that moment. So,
isn't that so true? Do you ever have the experience, Eleanor, sometimes I'm reading through and I think, wait, did I write that one? I don't think I did, but I sure could have.
Exactly. That's so much fun. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was trying to think. The other thing I thought about in the month-long conversation is it reminds me a little bit of guidance at a retreat also. So you're going along and for me, sometimes I'm stuck in something, but it's kind of subtle. You know, I don't really know I'm stuck. You know, I think this is what's going on. And then guidance, in this case, email class, you put it out there and then something comes back and it's like, oh, you know, this is helpful.
Exactly. Really.
And it
helpful.
Goes in a different, and you never know where it's going to end up on these. It's so great. It's just the back and forthness of the, you know, the looking and the both, you know, my response and the guide's response. And then it's like it takes a turn. And I don't know. I've been thinking about how to describe it, but And that's
well,
kind of
and I think that's a, you actually really pointed at something that I don't think I'd articulated for myself, but especially in the Socratic email classes. So one of the difference between a more traditional email class and the Socratic ones is that a more traditional one will tend to have a topic, and then there are assignments that come out, and then people respond to that particular assignment. But as you pointed out with the Socratic one, each person is looking at their own practice to see, okay, where am I right now? And what do I want to look at? And I loved that piece of, so you start in one place, and you looked, you know, as much as you can see, and you're really, you know, recording and listening about it maybe, or whatever you've seen about it, and then you write in, and over the course of those interactions, you end up somewhere you could have never predicted or seen, because you're each time you're getting pointed in another direction, another place to look, and it deepens and deepens through that process.
Exactly. That always amazes me. It's definitely ego can't have the expectations don't work out, you know, so it shows
exactly.
It brings you back to practice,
yeah,
in that place. And definitely that you mentioned the recording, I definitely record and listen to it. And I've been thinking about trying to find a way to separate, I haven't been doing this, but separate my stuff from all the other recordings that I'm doing, because I always end up with a really rich batch of recordings from the responses from an email class. And
so almost
anyway,
like making a special folder or a special recorder or whatever,
yeah,
it is, just in particular for the email class. Uh-huh.
That might be helpful or not. It seems to work okay the other way as well, but the organized part of me that wants
with
to get it in line and get it right wants it to be something else, I guess. Oh,
well,
man.
There you go. And actually, that, see, Eleanor, that points at one of the fun things I saw that just dropped in for me today around the class, was that I realized that one of the things that's so lovely about a Socratic email class is that, you know, in the kickoff on Saturday, last Saturday, we were talking about that place of, actually, I'm not sure we used these words on Saturday, but it felt to me like we were pointing at that place where there's a movement we can make in practice that's about where we're looking, you know, where am I, kind of what's the process I'm in as I'm looking at all of this? And what I realized is so fun about as a Socratic email class is coming up is that I find myself really looking in a different way, maybe from a different vantage point or a little bit more step back, looking at my practice to see what would I like to focus on for this period of time. And that in itself feels like such a helpful movement to the practice making, that stepping back to look to see, you know, where do I want guidance?
Yes, and kind of the Saturday kickoff was really helpful for me when I went into that place of letting of looking at what I wanted to practice with, and then I got to see how that got taken over by egocentric karmic conditioning, and so I got to see it. That was kind of what,
yep,
was happening Saturday for me, and it was like, yep, oh, so this is what the process I can use to, yes, step outside that. And anyway, I got to use kind of go through those steps we were looking at Saturday that I'm looking forward to practicing with this year, and back out, because I'd kind of let ego,
yeah,
take over with, oh, what are we going to focus on? And
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see what
and
I mean?
And that I do. I think I do. And because I project what you're pointing at is that as we have, you know, we were talking about seeing it all through the lens of awareness. So instead of being in it and, you know, kind of seeing through that being in it lens, we have the awareness that it's happening. And once we have the awareness that it's happening, I think part of what you're pointing at is it dawns on us, oh, that's what I could look at, for example, in the Socratic email,
mm-hmm,
class. I could look,
mm-hmm,
at that,
exactly,
process of, now what am I going to look at in the class, and how is that going to, right?
Yes, yeah, but that led me to somewhere in there is going to be what I probably focus on,
exactly,
something that I,
exactly,
saw in that. Yeah, right.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And once I,
exactly,
step outside and, yeah, and let go of the whatever else was going on. Exactly.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah. It's that place where we talk about, whatever's going on right now, that's the portal through to it, right? So, gosh, I don't know, what am I going to look at for the email class? I mean, how am I going to, I just don't, you know, it always happens that I, and then, oh, wait, that's somewhere
there it
in
is.
There, like I step back from it, exactly, and through there is the, that's what I want to look at. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's all coming together quite nicely.
It always does somehow, doesn't it?
And I'll have to say I couldn't be more ready for this kind of practice now after what feels like kind of being on my own for a little bit here without the daily call. So I'm really excited to have a month of coming back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Me too, and I think there's something very rich about that. I'm glad you said that because I've been looking at that too, that we had this sort of month of January without any of those things, which is always a little helpful, right? That's sort of like going to another country or leaving your house and coming back to it. Something where it wakes you up to what the privilege you've had, makes you more grateful for it. And then before we start the radio shows again, to get to have this solid month to really focus on the email class and the intensity and support of that feels really like a nice balance.
It does. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I see we're at the top of the hour. Eleanor, was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
I think I'm clear. I'm happy with it. Thank you.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, pretty excited. All right. Well, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Yep. Have a great night. A good, great show.
Thanks. You too. Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Eleanor. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Eleanor. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. And good afternoon, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. How are you?
Good. It's a sunny day. Thank
yeah.
God for all the
yeah.
rain, but so glad for some sun.
Yes. Lovely. Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun to hear about the new email class as well.
I know. Someone was saying this at the end of the New Year's retreat, right, that when it was a powerful retreat to do. And if we're beginning a new year the way we ended it, then the focus that we came up with for practice is something that we just don't walk out of the retreat and don't have any support for. That there is a way in which practice carries us through with whatever we've seen and assists us in all of these different ways. There's always something that we can do in practice that assists us to deepen our practice.
Yes, yes, and so great to have all of these different practice opportunities lined up and often overlapping as well to support us.
Well, and I think that, we're particularly well set up for the Socratic email class because the kickoff had such a very, offered such a very specific way to train in our process. So it's not just that we pick the content area that we're working with, but that we've been offered a process focus that we could bring to this class and practice with it for a whole month before we start doing that with the year-long retreat. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's great. So if I'm following you, it's a chance to kind of warm up and practice with this focus on process before we start the year-long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. I have announcements here, unless you want to send us in a different direction first.
No. Can't wait to hear the announcements. The calendar is heating up already.
Yes, it is. And the first one, do you need clarity around some sticky content in your life? As we heard from Jen and Eleanor, you don't want to miss the new Socratic email class with Sherry that begins February 1st. Participants will choose their focus for the class and will have 6 interactions with Sherry. And March is a beautiful time to be at the monastery, and it has been designated as a month of quiet, intentional focus on practice. If you have ever been a visiting monk, you are welcome to come for any length of time, a week, 2 weeks, or the whole of March, for this visiting monk intensive. Please email monastery-retreats@livingcompassion.org for more information or to reserve a place. And gain some helpful insight into family karma at a retreat with Sherry and Ashwini in North Carolina, April 15th through 20th. The retreat will include yoga, meditation, and guidance with Sherry. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And some reminders for today's show. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini, you can press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic and about 5 minutes in length is great. Okay, Ashwini, you ready to go?
I'm ready, Michael.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. It's Barbara here in Australia.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, Happy New Year. I don't know really what to say. I haven't called in for quite a while. I have been in the queue a few times, but I was aware the last time I called in, after I'd hung up, I heard a voice say, "You realize that this goes on the internet and anyone can listen to it." And it was like this. It was this, you know, I've been calling in for a long time, and I haven't called back since then. Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? Firstly, that we would hear a voice, we would listen to it, and then believe it sufficiently, whatever the implication of that is, and then not do something that supports us so much.
Go ahead. You know, it's been a difficult period. I've got housing difficulties that have been ongoing for most of last year, and you know, I've been in and out of being quite identified with a suffering story, and I think that too, like, I've been talked into feeling like I've got to wait till I'm less identified and things are going better before I'm... Yeah, because there was a voice sort of saying, oh, that you're always having a challenging time when you call in, you know. And other people aren't. Other people aren't. It never changes for you, but it changes for other people.
Yeah. Yeah, it is so interesting, right, Barbara, that when we don't take it at a content level, but we look at... When we have an awareness of this kind of process, if we look at conditioned mind, right, what it's doing, we see a pattern emerge, right? In the first and in the second cases, the conversation is all about isolating you with it, right?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
fear that what you say might be, I couldn't even project what the implication of you being heard on the internet might be for you. Right? Just as in the second case, oh my God, if you're having a hard time, you can't actually call in and get the support that you would need when you're having a hard time. Because that's what the show is for, to celebrate all our successes and to do it together as a Sangha and to have and be in the energy of everyone rooting for you and your practice and offering whatever support they can offer. And so I think that's so useful, not to take it personally, not to take it at the level of content, but just to see the payoff of listening to the voices and noticing what the effect, the result is, to come back to here.
Yeah. It's definitely about, because it also, you know, and then it becomes about quitting practice altogether and,
as Terry would say, always what the voices are angling for, right? To quit.
Yeah.
To quit anything that allows your heart to be open, for you to get support, for you to see that the world is not the way that the voice in your head paints it to be.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, doing these year-long retreats that are just like every day, it's been really useful to be able to see really clearly when there's mm-hmm. those undulations in my practice
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
my willingness. And so I think ego gets hold of that as something, as a standard, rather than mm-hmm. being able to see it as, oh, this is a great opportunity to get to see when I'm here and when I'm not, and
mm-hmm.
when I'm listening to that resistance conversation and when I'm not.
Yes, what a good point, that when there is a daily touch point that you've had that allowed you to see the undulation in your practice, that you were less vulnerable to believing what ego was saying and just noticing the undulations as the undulations. And what you're seeing now is that has become a standard, right, that the way that it's being used against you. So the support of that daily show is not available, and there's a way in which you should be feeling that you're not feeling, and so that's a reason to quit or a reason to withdraw rather than a reason to engage.
Yes, it's like seeing those ego processes of standards and comparing and assessing going on in my practice, like comparing to other people in the Sangha or, you know,
something else you said, Barbara, that is so worth noting. If we're looking at conditioned mind rather than through it and seeing what it does, right? Because that notion that it is unchanging, your story is unchanging, is so true from the perspective that ego is unchanging. It says the same thing over and over and over again, and you're supposed to think that's you, not it. And it also brings that place of how untrue. If we just spend 1 minute looking around here, everything's always changing. The clouds are moving, the wind is blowing, there's a hummingbird here for 1 second, there's a different thought. There's so much change in the moment that the only sameness comes from that process.
Yeah. And
if we catch on to it that way, then we know we're in it, right? And so then we can redirect the attention and say, okay, I recognize that as an ego process, because it has a flavor of sameness. It's telling me some story about sameness, or it's telling me some story about comparison, or it's telling me some story about isolation.
Yes. Yes, I was listening to something the other day that was referring to an old blog of Sherry's where she listed, you know, if you are this, 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 and this, you're identified. And I thought, yeah, I need to do that and put it up on my wall. And I think, too, the other thing, Ashwini, is that, you know, because Sangha is sort of upping the ante in the level of opportunity and practice that's happening by, you know, the daily practice with year-long retreats, that ego is kind of upping the ante of sort of screaming about, I don't want to do that. Like, there's a certain amount of practice that ego is kind of willing to go along with. But then at
You're
some point...
You're so right.
You're
so right. Yeah, it's so absolutely true that the more practice that's available and the more practice the practitioner signs up for, the more threatened ego is and therefore amps up the level of resistance. It's really, it's appropriate, and it's hoping, as you said, that it'll get you to quit. If we see it, we are allowed to have the experience that actually ego is a finite force, compared to the willingness that we could potentially bring to the process, the infinite love that we, unconditional love that we can draw from life in any moment, really can't stand up to the ego. And we just get the opportunity to prove that to ourselves.
Okay, well, it's good to see. And, you know, it's only really been in the last, you know, few years that that started to happen, that kind of those periods of, like, you should just quit. I just want to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to get, you know, just to really see that connection is useful and powerful.
It is absolutely, you know, in this very conversation, we identified five attributes of the ego process, right? It's isolation, it's comparative, it's resistance, it's resistant, it always asks us to quit, and I can't remember the fifth one.
Standards.
But, comparative.
Yeah.
I can't remember that fifth one, but I think there was one. But it's just like, okay, well, I know where I am.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much. Really helpful.
Thanks, Barbara. It's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael.
Take
You're
care.
Welcome.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Barbara. Ashwini, what really landed for me is the sense that ego is unchanging and how that can be a help.
Oh, that was it. That was the first one, Michael. Thank you.
That's
the sameness, right?
Right, yeah. And to me, it makes it that much more helpful to recognize it because it is the same.
Yeah. Exactly so.
Yeah. And we have another caller here.
Wonderful.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Ashwini. It's Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, I always forget to say this, but for the last few years, I've been wanting to say just a quick thank you to Michael because he always finds something kind to say after we've called in and been vulnerable and spilled our guts. And then when I re-listen to the archives, I really appreciate how he says something kind about every caller.
Yeah. It's a wonderful practice, isn't it, Elizabeth?
It's just like medicine. Every time I listen to myself and, you know, self-hate comes in, and then, Michael, I hear his kindness, like, well, that was very brave, or whatever he says. But anyway, I just needed a little bit of guidance because there's an EKC anger censorship scam I get caught in every year.
Uh-huh.
The censorship. Okay, so the anger censorship scam, it's a scam about a scam. It's like, content is going on in life. I'm not allowed to be angry, or I shouldn't be angry because it's content. And we all know, you know, like, hey, it's not about content, it's about process. And there's a way in which EKC takes all the teachings of Zen Awareness Program and uses them to censor my anger because I don't want to be like the average common unenlightened person complaining every moment about the weather and this, that, and the other thing. I want to be somehow like better than that in a Zen awareness student way. And then my anger just gets volcanoizes and I end up having an explosion after a while.
Uh-huh. So you recognize a process there, right? The process you're calling the scam is, and you see really clearly how it happens. So the egocentric, we try to say the whole thing, Elizabeth, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, basically tells you that there's a standard of what it looks like to be a perfect Zen student, and a perfect Zen student has to use the teachings and not be angry, and so you're not allowed to express whatever it is that's going on for you, and because you hear a voice telling you that, you believe the voice, you act from it, you don't express your anger, and then that builds until the point that the energy is too much, and then you explode, and after reject, you get a beating. And you're seeing that perfectly clearly as a process.
Yes, but I believe the voice, the censorship voice, because it comes in the form of a teaching. Like, if something turned out the opposite of the way I had hoped, then it's like, well, just there's always some teaching, like, well, this is a good time to practice patience and ever-expanding faith and all that, and it seems like the right teaching, and then it ends up that I just would have been better off just getting angry.
Uh-huh. Well, that's an interesting observation, too. So you're also noticing that the way it gets you, so I would project that you're a very sincere practitioner, right? This is your life focus, to wake up and end suffering. And so the ego can get you. The reason you believe it is because it talks to you, it talks to the person who's the most sincere and will believe it, right? But what I hear you saying is you actually are catching on to the process. You actually notice that the reason you believe it is because it sounds like a teaching, which actually gives you some information on how you can practice with it, right? Because if you just believed it, that would just be it. But what you saw, you were aware of the fact that you believe it because it comes in the form of the teaching. If there's that level of awareness right then and there, then perhaps the practice there could be pick up the recorder and say, is that so? Is that really true? Which teaching says that? Is that what it is that, is that what I need to express or need to be listening to right now? Because this is the place where we often talk about the pseudo-mentor, right? The place where ego just assumes the language of practice and then talks to you in the language of practice because you're a sincere practitioner and you believe.
I mean, and it would have worked with the first, you know, dozen things, but after three dozen things, it's a volcano of anger.
Yes, and so to me, let me ask you the question. There's no teaching in practice that says you can't facilitate your experience, right?
Yes, I guess that's what gets bypassed in the censorship scam.
Yes. So you know it. You've identified the scam, you've identified the voice, you've identified the person who believes it. So now I think what you're looking at is how to practice with that. And I think you've arrived at how you want to practice with it, which is just to make a recording or listen to a recording, or in those places where the insight comes in that the scam is operating, you want to actually perhaps do a two-handed recording so that you could pick up the recorder and the right hand can actually say what's going on for her so that the energy doesn't escalate to an explosion.
Yeah, I guess if I'm more with the two-handed, then I am facilitating and not the scam of bypassing, using a teaching to bypass the experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I'm aware of this when it's going on. I'm only aware, like, after I've been, anger has been volcanoized, and then, like, I start acting out, and, like, of course, then there's a beating because I've totally been a jerk to my husband or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's also, I mean, we were talking with Barbara about the way we can understand how conditioning works, right? So conditioning is not around to say, oh, hi, hey, this is a moment where you could do a two-handed recording exercise. It says, okay, here's the teaching. The person is completely unconscious, has completely blown up, is completely not there, and then it taps you on the shoulder and says, you know, what kind of a person are you that you were just a jerk to your husband, right? It's a perfect moment. The moment of awareness becomes a moment of self-hate. Rather than a moment of awareness, we can stay with ingratitude for we saw it. We saw it at least at this point. And this is where I think Sherry actually came up with process mapping, right? Because she was interested in knowing about her process of anger. So she would pay really close attention. Because what we have to do in a process such as anger is keep paying attention to just the moment before, to just the moment before. Because as you said, the going unconscious started at the first time you heard whatever it was that upset you and the teaching came in. And what you're seeing is that the explosion happens way past that. So we want to start to bring an expanded sense of awareness to the process, right? So just, okay, what came before that? What came before that? What comes before that? And if there's a way in which you can process map it, like what teaching did you hear? Okay, be patient. So I'm going to put that on a sticky. And then I heard a Zen student doesn't get angry. Put that on the sticky. And now you are starting to trace all of the voices that you listened to and believed before the explosion happened. And then if you process map it and record it, there's a way in which the awareness increases to register, oh, I'm in that identified place because I'm hearing a voice in my head that says, I've got to be patient.
Yes, and another sticky would be like every day there's a sticky, an unconscious, I have to add a sticky, the unconscious process when I read the newspaper and people getting their arms and legs blown off, wherever, by the Taliban or ISIS or whatever, it adds to the censorship, like, oh, I can't be mad just because, you know, the weather stinks here. And that becomes a force. But it's like I fall for it every time.
That's okay, Elizabeth. We'll fall for it until we don't, right? Because that could go on a sticky as well. That's what we were talking to Barbara about. The self-hate is being maintained by, when are you ever going to become the kind of awareness practitioner, Elizabeth, that you won't fall for me? And the answer is, I don't know. There isn't a timeline for that. So you might want to put that on the sticky, too, in your process map, because it's the end, it's the beating. So once we start to get the process map, we could train ourselves to go to, every time I hear that voice that says you shouldn't get mad, you pick up the recorder and do the two-handed recording exercise, right? I'm really mad. I'm really upset at having read this newspaper report, and you let the person talk, because what is authentic in that is something you want to get in touch with and be with, which is the tremendous amount of caring that is not allowed to be your experience. Because that's really what ego is doing, right? It's using the teaching to prevent you from being in touch with your love and your humanity and all of what you care about.
Yes,
you're only allowed to have your anger, not your love.
And there's a standard of humanity that, with, you know, if you're a Zen student, then, you know, you have to have a different, you had a different standard of humanity than just the common average person who just complains nonstop about everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we do practice compassionate speech that makes for clarity and all of those kinds of things. We practice don't be angry, you know, the precepts. But it's not a standard, right? It's a process. We're always looking at where we are in something. Only, it's another thing we can add to our list of what is ego, right? Ego is sameness. So you've got to be something defined by a particular standard is completely opposite to the truth of the universe, where nothing is the same in any moment. There's no absolute anything at any time. And so it's such a bogus kind of, it's such an illusory thing because it doesn't exist. The standard is completely made up for everything, goodness or evil, right? And that's our experience. That's why we get angry when we read the newspaper, right? Or not, or have a lot of energy in response because we're responding. We don't have to react, but we absolutely are sentient enough to respond.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. This is going to help me a lot.
Excellent. And you'll call back and let us know how you're doing.
Yes, like every teaching is just enough rope for me to hang myself with.
But only if you let it, right? I mean, I think that should go on a sticky as well, because you can so clearly see the process by which the teaching becomes a standard to hang you.
Yep.
And every time that happens, we know what you're going to do. You're going to put it on a sticky, or you're going to pick up the recorder and talk about what's going on for you.
Yes. Yes, I am. Thank you. Thank you very
Excellent.
Much. And
thank
thanks
you.
Everybody. In Canada. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. Ashwini, what I got from that conversation is how cruel it is that conditioning uses practice against us, and
yeah.
the good hearts that we bring to practice, and how it just manipulates us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is cruel in that sense. And I think it's cruel because I would project, no matter what the content is, we could all look at the place where self-hate gets us most, or where ego gets us most, is it uses what we, it's always our love is where we get hurt the most, right?
Yes.
It wounds us the most.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And the courage to bring all of it to practice for guidance and for assistance to see our way through it. It's great.
Yeah.
Ashwini, we're going to break here and hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Build compassionate discipline into your life with Zen Awareness Coaching. Weekly calls and email check-ins provide kind support and accountability for waking up and ending suffering. With a coach, we strengthen the skill of recognizing when we are caught in conditioning and choosing presence instead. Having attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat is a prerequisite for Zen Awareness Coaching. To request a coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Make a change for good this year for your practice and your life by participating in Zen Awareness Coaching.
Welcome back to Open Air. And that was another great reminder for Zen Awareness Coaching, wasn't it?
It really was. And we are graduating to making a change for good as the focus for the year.
Yes. Yes. Fabulous. And we have another caller here.
Yep.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. It's Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi. I'm looking at something two very interesting things have happened. And one was that I was asked by Living Compassion to proofread something yesterday. And as it turns out, what I was asked to proofread spoke directly to the process I was in.
Oh, don't you love it when that happens?
I love it. And it was like, wow, the web. You know, it's just a mystery to me how that happens, but it was like the force is with us, you know?
Yes.
And it was great. And then today, go ahead.
I think that it's so important to underline those experiences in awareness, right? Because we're so used to what ego does and how ego frames the world, the reality, our experience, the story, etc. But to know on a self level that we're sought, we're loved, we're supported, we're given what we need, ask and you shall receive, it's just a wonderful thing to say, because it is a reality. It's really a true reality if we attend to our awareness of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it is important to see that. And today, I was I had kind of a different experience. Well, not different, but I was at the gym, and I overheard a conversation between a gentleman who works there at the gym and then a couple of people who go there to work out. And the conversation was political, and it was expressing some viewpoints that are in direct opposition to mine. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with health care, universal health care. And so I was listening to that, and I wasn't paying attention, but it was, they were pretty close, and it was hard to not hear it. And I became aware that I was feeling there was resistance, kind of some annoyance, irritation, and then there was some frustration was kind of going through, and eventually it got to feeling some sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am seeing about that is, or what it looks like at least now, is that I'm sad. I wasn't sad so much that they felt the way they felt or believed what they believe or were expressing, but that people, that attitude can stop people who, you know, need health care from getting health care if enough, you know, if enough people feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I realized that there was just kind of this big worry about people who don't have health care. And so I was kind of in those emotions, and suddenly, you know, of the experience from, wow, the force is with us, and I am fully supported, we are all fully supported, went to, gosh, this is unfriendly territory, the world is kind of scary, people are scary. And I saw that. Did see that.
Wow.
And
yes.
Yeah, and I'm glad. I'm glad I saw that. And I will say this. After that, I had an encounter with the man who works there at the gym, and it was a friendly encounter. There was, it was like I was still kind of sad, and I wasn't mad at him because we disagree, you know, or he believes what he believes, but it's like I care about him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice,
mm-hmm.
he's been nice to me, he's helped me. And so there are a whole lot of emotions and things I'm seeing, but I finally got to, or kind of where I am now, is that there's, I'm being fully supported by life and that experience too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exactly clear as to exactly how,
mm-hmm.
but I want to stick with it, and I want to just keep staying open, because I feel like there are some things that I can see here for me.
Mm-hmm. There's so much in what you said, Catherine. I mean, there are so many levels at which we could look at this. But the thing that dropped in for me about the whole experience was the peace quote from this morning. It says something about there's something humbling about never being able to come to a conclusion. Something
mm-hmm.
touching
yeah.
in your raw vulnerability to the evening. The way you are moved by everything now, your sensitivity to even the subtlest movement of consciousness, your heart that cannot be closed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it, right? Because first of all, you were paying attention to your process. Your attention was on awareness, which allows you to watch how what arises for you, a series of different experiences, but not from a place of being identified with it, which would make you give voice to something, but a place from which you were watching it. And I project that the watching it had moments of expanded awareness and moments of much more narrow awareness, but you were paying attention to the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way in which you were in touch with what you were feeling and could own that experience, like we were talking to Elizabeth, and that did not mean that there was judgment of anyone else. That expanded awareness that we inhabit allows us to hold multiple experiences, right? My feeling of caring, profound caring, the experience of sadness, noticing the ego process, noticing a conversation between two people, and all of that is just held in awareness. It doesn't have to be conclusive. It doesn't have to be resolved, as the quote suggests. It just mm-hmm. is something that we are lived by, right? And so mm-hmm. who you are and the love that you are in touch with that animates you is perfectly capable of being loving to someone who expresses a point of view that's different from you and allows for your perspective and someone else's perspective to be held in awareness without it necessarily being a place of suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that powerful awareness that you had, right, that what I was experiencing this moment ago was life is supporting of me, that's what I want to stick with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not moving into that place where it wants to collapse the awareness to the world as a hostile place. Because we can know what that force is, and really, I don't know, Catherine, but this is my experience and makes me religious, right? That part of what I have to develop trust and faith in is I am supported all the time, not just in those good places.
Yes.
Because it's in the hardest places, as you said, that you want to be able to recognize the experience of being supported there too, which is what you were paying attention to, right? Even in those hard places, life is there for me. Conditioning would want that to be felt in a particular way, right? A specific kind of experience. But intuitively, you knew you were being held through that too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What a wonderful practice.
Yeah.
Celebration.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, both of those experiences were gifts. And I love it. The peace quote, and it doesn't have to be resolved. Nothing has to be fixed. We can just stay open. And the web, I keep calling it the web. I don't know where I got that, but it feels like that. It feels like we're all connected, and it's kind of beautiful, and I can get disidentified and think I'm not connected, but I mean, I can become identified and think I'm not connected, but that I don't know. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what is unfolding. What is there? And I guess what is required, it feels like required for me, is the faith and the knowledge of the experience I've already have of being supported.
Yes. Well, and it's exactly that, right? We don't know. We don't know any context. But if we're here to experience ourselves as unconditional love, to me, what you just experienced there was so important, right? Because the way conditioning would cause isolation or separation is to go after something you care about, right? I want people to have health care. It comes from a deep place of caring. But health care becomes content that can be used to drive a wedge between you and the person who doesn't think that health care is necessary for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So if we fall for that, if we fall for ego mm-hmm. creating that wedge, then you and the other person are separate over a content that you care about. So
mm-hmm.
in that moment, the choice for what we're all going for, which is connection, is not the choice you get to make. So it's not about whether you agree on healthcare or can come to an agreement on healthcare, but in that place where the choice is between choosing non-separation and separation, what did you choose? And you chose love.
Mm-hmm.
That allows us to have different positions on content, but come to agreement on process. Because the only common ground we have with anybody is the fact that the intelligence that animates both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And because everything else on top of that, we most often disagree on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some level, we disagree on it. So the ability to come, if ego is operating, any content on top of that is going to be a reason to divide. And so I'm always operating at the level of gassho. Can I acknowledge that our hearts are one,
mm-hmm.
and then we can debate differences till the cows come home, because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't really affect what unites us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well, I can tell you that ego hates that whole idea, and the heart absolutely loves it.
Yeah, well, it would, right? We can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't get to play in that domain, right? The context
right.
that we come from is unconditional. And so it's going to try to find a position, but
mm-hmm.
The more you practice the way you practiced with that situation at the gym, which is simply to stay in awareness of your process rather than identify with it, then it actually is not going to be successful, because it can no longer get you to the divisive position.
To the what position? I'm sorry?
The dividing, the divisive.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
yeah. It could before, but it can't now, because you were paying such close attention to your process.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, well, I can't wait for tomorrow, what it brings.
chalk one for life.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. That was a huge conversation, Ashwini. So many
it was,
fascinating.
Wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And the one thing that dropped in strongly for me is that I'm supported all the time, kind of whether I know it or not, and perhaps especially when I don't think it's there, to have that faith.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so wonderful, because that experience articulated a situation we find ourselves in often, and not only how to practice with it, but the spiritual ramifications of how to actually transform ourselves and the world, right, by our choices.
Yes. Yes. Fabulous. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chris calling from Florida.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. So I have become aware of a process that I guess happens pretty much everywhere in my life and can be so convincing in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big one. I guess the summary of it would be something like, conditioning or the information comes in that I've done something really wrong and I'm in big trouble now. And then there's going to be some big consequence later that I like won't be able to handle in some way.
Yes. Well, it's so important to be that clear about how it says it to you, right? Because otherwise that's the same process you're in everywhere in your life all the time. You did something wrong, you're going to get into trouble, and you can't stand the sensation of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a little kid place, right?
Yeah.
It's what we grew up with. Okay, well, you did something wrong, you're going to get punished, and you're not going to be able to take it. So, because, you know, as a kid, perhaps we couldn't. We cry and whatever it is, and that conditioning remains so with us all the time.
Mm-hmm. I feel it's a very young, stuck kind of place when I'm in that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And there are no exits, right? It's that complete. There's no way you can argue with it if you're believing it. Something's wrong. It was your fault. You're going to get punished. You're not going to be able to stand it. Yeah.
And I guess I get quite the real stuck part is that kind of, even if I'm aware, so I can reach that awareness, okay, this is an ego process. But the difficulty seems to be that each new content feels so, there's just a wedge of believability where I think, okay, but this one is real. The other ones were fake, but this one is real. And you have to worry about this one.
And so do you see that part of the conversation as part of the conversation also? Right, if we were talking to Elizabeth about it, it would just go on another sticky.
Ooh,
Right, because there's a way in which what we're training ourselves to do is disidentify and stay in awareness at every place. So conditioning's response to that is to direct the attention from awareness to back to the conversation in a different way. Because what we're doing is training ourselves out of believing, right? It no longer can get you to believe this process because you've identified it. And so the attention goes to, well, you know, in this content, it's more believable.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next step around that is to disidentify from that and hang it onto the process map.
Yeah, because that seems to be a detour that's kind of like the next step. If I've already figured out this major process, it can always seem to use the particularities of this particular situation.
Right. Yeah. So however that works, however you train yourself in that, right? However you trained yourself to recognize this process, you now want to put this building block onto it. Whenever I'm in this process of, you know, I'm going to get into trouble and I'm feeling these sensations, what I know to anticipate next is in this situation, it's completely believable. But what I know is true is that's just the next building block in the process. So it'll keep me in relationship with it.
And I think that I need to do probably the sticky note and a recording and just have that be really, like I can't miss it because somehow my recorder will get placed somewhere else and then I won't actually see it anymore and, you know, that kind of.
Yes. Yeah, we know all of those ways in which conditioning is going to ensure that awareness doesn't get trained to recognize that voice, that specific voice as a call to stay in awareness rather than tumble into conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a practice, right? Chris, I'm sure you've done that so often where for a while you keep falling for it and falling for it and falling for it, but you have a separate parallel practice of listening to that recording. So you're training awareness either in process or out of the process, it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But there's a way in which you recognize that recording shows up for you and go, bingo, that, hey, something from awareness triggers you to noticing what awareness has been trained to notice.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I have to, it's like a recalibrating to maybe that ringing true feeling rather than the fearful believability.
Beautifully stated. It's reprogramming that, right? Mm-hmm. That the believability of the fear sensation is transmuted to that's just another voice. Mm-hmm. I can be aware of it rather than be identified with it. And it's something you know you can do because you can recognize that other large process played out. And I protect you. You did that because you did the process of writing down the stickies and what are the beliefs and assumptions and what's self-hate doing and who's here and all of the recordings around that allowed you to get a handle on what I would project was a very large process for you.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, since the How You Do Anything class ended, I was working with a big piece of content and it ended. My master's program was over and I thought it would be smooth sailing, but I've seen the same process happen maybe 7 times in the past month. And the whole time I was thinking, okay, you know, once you turn in your work and you're done, ego will lay off. I mean, that was kind of, I was bamboozled in that way. And then to see how being put in a crisis mode multiple times over little things, it was really eye-opening.
Yes, eye-opening from the perspective of seeing how conditioning operates, right? That there's a way in which it doesn't matter what the content is. We often call it the process looking for content. The content can be anything, but the process of comparison, isolation, there's something wrong with you, distraction, all of the bamboozles of ego can be transferred to all content. But in some way, I would project you're training yourself to notice conditioning at a process level, not at a content level. And intuitively, that's what you're pointing to. I'm seeing it happen, the same process everywhere. And so at some point, you'll no longer be surprised that you notice the process because conditioning uses every different content for the same process, which actually works to our benefit because if we have to solve it at every level of content in our lives, boy, would that be hard.
And I think that reframing, that approach where it's actually to my benefit, that it is so rudimentary and so kind of simple. I mean, it feels so, you get so sucked in, but that's true. It's really basic. It's like an old computer program that we have in our heads.
Exactly. And that recognition, as soon as you get it, as soon as awareness registers, aha, process, well, something wrong, it's your fault, you're going to get into trouble, you can't stand it, and this content is really believable, flashes through for you, you can stay in awareness and train the attention to remain present rather than go to whatever it's going to throw at you as the next hook for you to get attention on, right? Because you just know that that's the pattern. That's what it does.
Wow, I just got an image that'll help me a lot, and I'll share it. Maybe it helps someone else too, of just conditioning, throwing hooks, and I'm sitting there going on being present and not picking up the hook.
Yes, because you can watch it throw the hook. Mm-hmm. You just don't have to pick up the hook, right? And that doesn't mean you're not in awareness, because only in awareness can you see the hook being thrown.
And that seems to be a key, just to be able to watch, to be there enough to watch the hook being thrown.
Yeah, and every time we pay attention to what gets put on the next sticky, we've just trained awareness to pay attention at a different place in ego's process, right?
That is so helpful. Thank you so much for that.
You're most welcome, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Chris. That was an amazing conversation also, Ashwini. I don't know how you and the callers managed to do that, but the same process with new content, and I just saw my whole life, and I saw the process the way ego divides it up, and it's just so incredibly helpful.
Yeah, we can start to, articulate all of the attributes of conditioning on the one hand and how specifically it shows up for us on the other hand.
Yes.
And it's a finite amount, the finite number of those, you know? It's not like
there's
an infinity of them. Thank God.
Yes. Yes, thank goodness, thank goodness. And our time is up tonight, Ashwini, and it's been a great show, and I'm grateful that you've been here and all of our callers and everyone else. It's been lovely, so thank you.
It's a wonderful show indeed, Michael, and I will echo Elizabeth's deep gratitude for your kindness after every call and for being here every week.
Thank you. You're welcome. And
take care.
We'll talk with everyone next week.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.